What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 276 of Two Amazon Sellers and a Microphone, brought to you by Celozo. And today we're talking about making serious cash with online
big dollars
with online arbitrage, and we're going to talk about wholesale as well. But joining us, we've had this guest on. Dave's amazing. Had him on back in February of 2022. But joining us again from OA Deals is Dave LaCroix. What's up, Dave? How are you?
Not much. It's good to be here.
We like your background.
Thank you. It's just like a white backdrop, and then I bought a light to flash on it. So looks a lot more professional.
It's very good. Very good. We like that. But man, thanks for joining us again. It'll be fun to catch back up. I was telling Chris before we went live, I was like, I love talking arbitrage. I love it. I love everything about it. It's like, it brings me back to, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, trying every possible like flip side hustle you can do. And on Amazon, you can just scale it so much. So we'll talk all about that. But Dave, for everyone listening in or seeing you for the first time, you want to give us a little quick background on your journey to this point?
Yeah. So I started selling on Amazon in 2016. So I'm coming up on 7 years now, and really just got started with arbitrage, retail arbitrage in particular, going to stores, scanning things with the Amazon seller app. Didn't know what I was doing at first, but I chose that model because at the time I was working just a minimum wage job and didn't have a lot of money to get started. So I would say if you have anything, maybe $5,000 or less to get started with, it's a really good model because you can buy as little as you want and just send it in to FBA and see how it sells. So first couple trips, just went to Walmart, didn't really buy too much, but my first like real success was with buying the North Face backpacks from the outlets here in Orlando, Florida. That's where I live. And I bought about $500 worth of backpacks, sent them in and sold them within a week and started making pretty good money just flipping products on Amazon. And to the point where I was making more than my job. So I was making minimum wage, so it wasn't too hard to surpass that. But once I did, I went full-time in 2017, and I've been doing it ever since. And I still do a lot of arbitrage. Like I have the money now to do private label if I wanted to, but I just stuck with arbitrage because that's what I really know. And we also started mixing in some wholesale as well, which is a very similar model to online arbitrage. The only difference is you got to reach out to brands and distributors to open accounts, but then the product analysis is all pretty much the same as with retail arbitrage and online arbitrage. So been doing that for, like I said, almost 7 years now. We have a warehouse with a couple employees, and then we have a virtual assistant team that helps us source the products. So that's basically how my business runs today.
Yeah, well-oiled machine, it sounds like. Has anything changed since the last time we talked to you, you know, a little over a year and a half ago? Has anything changed in the OA or RA or even wholesale game, or is it still pretty much cut and dry, you know? Go find products, list them, sell them, source them. Is it still pretty much the same process?
Yeah, the process is the same. I would say it's gotten a little bit more challenging. We've gotten a lot of cease and desist letters recently. Like we've seen a huge uptick with that. And that might just be because we're buying more different brands and products than ever before. I'm sure that's part of it. But the competition has gone up, and then also just a lot of brands that didn't really care years ago if you sold their stuff on Amazon, now have like their own strategy, which is kind of why we're more so focused on growing the wholesale side so that we can be more of an authorized seller on more of the products that we sell.
Sure. Are you using any type of AI now? I know last time that we talked, that wasn't really a thing, but you know, since November, I think AI is all over the place. AI tools for this, AI tools for that. Are you doing anything with AI?
I haven't really found an application for it for arbitrage specifically. I use it a little bit for like my own content that I post. Like, I don't know if you've heard of the tool Tweet Hunter.
Nope.
But it's an AI tool for Twitter. I don't know if you guys are active on there, but it basically like looks at all of your tweets and then it comes up with suggestions of stuff that you would say, and then you can like edit it and schedule your tweets. So I've been using it for that. And I've used it a couple times for like writing messages to my VAs because it writes really, really well.
Yes, nice. It does. Yeah. ChatGPT is fascinating.
Yeah,
for sure. You definitely can make a task like writing an email a lot faster and better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a great writer, so it does a lot better than I can do.
Me too.
I use it for groceries too. That's totally off topic, but like
groceries. How do you use it for groceries?
Yeah, wait, what?
You just say, give me 10 recipe ideas because I never know what to cook, and then give me the grocery list to like make this recipe. So it makes it a lot easier.
That's awesome.
That is a good idea.
That's awesome.
I'm going to start doing that. That's a great idea.
Put a HelloFresh, it's Hello Dave.
Yep. And then you can order the groceries. I don't know if your area has it, but we do like Walmart grocery delivery. So I'm just like automating my personal life a little bit more.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I'm wondering when the AI application will come to sourcing or finding arbitrage opportunities. You think that somebody out there is working on that right now? But
I would think that could be. I'm sure there will be something eventually.
For sure. Let's talk about your structure, your business structure. So I know, you've grown your team. You mentioned that you've got VAs that are focused on sourcing and probably purchasing, having the stuff shipped to your warehouse. I'm sure you have teams that are managing your repricing strategies and everything else. How do you manage that? I mean, is it a large team, small team, and do you delegate the different tasks to each of them, or do they have their own portfolio of the products that they're managing? How does that look?
Most of our VAs do pretty much the same thing, which is just going out and trying to source new leads for us. And then I just have two VAs that are focused on our own Amazon business. So they decide the products that we're going to buy for ourselves. And a lot of the excess leads we use, or we buy stuff off our own leads list, but a lot of leads we just put on our leads lists, which go out to other Amazon sellers. And then I have one VA who just focuses on purchasing. That's pretty much all he does. And he also does like some admin tasks for me, like you said, the repricer and stuff like that. And then I just hired someone to do like wholesale outreach for me, but she just started like a couple weeks ago. So we're still like kind of ironing out her position.
There's so much I mean, I've been doing it now for a while, for at least a year and a half. I am one of your leads list clients, so everyone can know that. Your lists are fantastic. I found some phenomenal buys off there. It makes the job much easier. That's, sourcing manually is difficult and very time consuming. So having a list like that has been helpful in me sort of trying to grow in this business model. And so talk about what a good lead looks like. What are your criteria when you're trying to figure out if a product is going to be good for arbitrage or not?
So it's really all about the KEPA analysis with products. Like a lot of my newer VAs, they'll ask me like, hey, what BSR bestseller rank should I look for? And it really kind of depends on a lot of factors that you see with the KEPA, because a product could be out of stock for 6 months and the BSR goes up to 1 million. But if you look back a year on the chart and you see that when it's in stock at $50, and we could buy it for 20, it sells really, really fast. So there's no real hard and fast rules that we follow, like a criteria we're looking for. It's more just on the KEPA analysis, and that comes with just looking at a lot of charts and getting experience with it.
What about the number of other sellers? How does that play in?
So that will depend on the velocity of the item. So if it's selling, if it's like a sub 100 rank selling thousands of times per month, then that product can handle a lot more competition than one that's not ranked that well. So if it's only selling 10 times a month and it's got 10 sellers on it with a competitive price, then that's probably something we would pass on.
What about the ROI you're targeting?
We'll usually look for, again, it kind of comes down to velocity. So if it's got really stable pricing and it's only 15% ROI, but we know we can sell a lot of them, then that's something we'd buy. But if it's a slower selling item, like a few times per month, then we obviously want to see a much higher ROI.
All right. This is something that I've just been dying to ask, because happens all the time. I'll make a buy. All the numbers look good, stable pricing, good ROI. I make the buy. I'm selling through my inventory, and then the price plummets. And then I'm like, how long do I wait before I make some decision on liquidating, dropping my price down and recouping some of my money? Or do I just leave it in there and let it go until at some point it sells at the price I want? Where's your cutoff on that?
So usually we'll give it like 30 days or so. And then we'll start lowering our price after that to somewhere around break even or like a lower ROI, like 10%. And then after 60 days, we'll usually just price it to sell, because we don't want to be racking up storage fees and stuff like that. And again, a lot of it, the best way to do it, in my opinion, is just to look at the KEPA chart. Because like some things you can tell after 20 days that there's little to no chance that the price is going to recover. So you're better off just like getting rid of it and getting that money back and reinvesting it in good product. Because then you're just going to sit on it for longer and you might end up actually selling for less like a month from now than if you would just get rid of it at that time.
So what do you recommend for people on like an initial order? I'll do things. Typically I'll try to buy as many units that gets me to like the free shipping to get to me, or maybe a little bit more if there's a lot of sales. But I'd like to take like an initial, whatever that is, 10 to 20 unit quantity to validate it first. Are they selling? And then before I buy, 100 of them, did I sell all through those 10 or 20? And is the price still stable? What are you typically doing? Are you making large purchases right off the bat on, I guess, like blind leads, like you haven't actually sold them yet? Or is there like a minimum that you're usually starting with for a new product?
Yeah, we do something similar, like 10 to 20 units, like you said, to get started. So it kind of depends on the website too. Like if we have experience with a site and know that we could order more and we've done similar products in the past, then we'll order more. But usually I would say around 20 units is like the average for an opening order for us. And then like if something does really well and it's still available, then we've had a couple products recently that we've ordered like 100 units each of.
And then what about, I mean, there a lot of the things that come on your lists they're discounted there's a promotion going on at the retailer or this website where the product is 40% off temporarily or whatever. You know that's going to be limited in time. Yeah. You could take advantage of that. What does that do in changing your buying approach? Do you try to buy as much as you can in a situation like that? Or are you still running with a smaller test amount?
It kind of depends on the site. Like as you get more experience, you start to notice patterns and you can track trends of like how often a site will run a sale. So like Walgreens, for example, they run a sale like pretty much all the time. So it's like, if they've got a sale going on, I'm not going to like stress, oh, I got to like buy this week, because they're probably going to have something else. But there's like a couple stores. One that I can think of that I know of, they like do a Black Friday sale, but that's like pretty much their only sale all year. So like last year we spent like $60,000 at this one store just on Black Friday. But because we know like we're getting it at this low price and then nobody else is going to be able to buy that low. So we take advantage of it when we can.
Yeah, I may have to change my approach to sales. I mean, I have not built out a team of VAs or anything else for the arbitrage aspect of my business yet. So for me, the attractive part was, can I find something where there's a mismatch between like Walmart and Amazon's price, but something that I can buy forever from a Walmart or a Target or whatever retailer it is, and just find a, 100 products that I can just keep reordering and keep reordering. But those are sometimes unicorns.
Yeah. I would say that's probably a misconception of arbitrage, especially online arbitrage, is there are replenishable products, but I don't think there's any replens that last for years on end. Like you might get 6 months out of a product, but to find 100 that, like, especially if it was at a Walmart, like people are definitely going to find that. So like the longer an opportunity is good and available, it's like the more chance of more people finding it, and eventually that won't be available anymore. It's kind of a downside to arbitrage, is you always going to be finding new products.
How often are you guys going back through like old leads, like leads from like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and validating if there's an opportunity again? Is that part of what you guys do?
Yeah, we try to look through old leads pretty regularly, but most of the stuff that we were buying 2 years ago, you can't buy anymore.
Okay, I got one more question. I know Chris probably wants to jump in here and get some questions. Something. But one more thing that I'm trying to figure out how to best manage, and it comes from the fact that you're constantly listing and selling temporarily new products all the time. So managing my catalog, what are you doing? Are you closing listings, deleting listings? What are you doing when you've stopped selling something? Because it impacts your a lot of your performance reports. Like if you've got a lot of open listings with no inventory, they're giving you a low score on your in-stock rate. How are you managing that? Is there a system that you keep employed where you're constantly closing listings?
Yeah, we try to like batch that out and go through it once per month and just delete listings that we know that we're not going to buy again.
If you feel like you are going to buy it though, you just leave it active.
Yeah, but most of the products that you buy with OA, you don't end up buying again. So a lot of stuff ends up getting deleted.
With Q4 coming up, is there certain categories you're focusing on right now? Are you stockpiling on certain products to get them ready to ship in Q4? And then when you do that, like, what is the cutoff date that you use to get those products to make sure that they're checked in time? Is there a certain metric you have to hit, or are you prepared for Q4? What's that look like on Q4?
We don't really really change our approach too much when it comes to Q4. Cause we kind of know, like, everything from Black Friday to Christmas is usually websites that have really, really good sales. It's like the best buying time of the year for us. So we don't actually buy all that much leading up to Black Friday, or we don't buy like extra, because we know the sales are going to be better when Black Friday hits. And we actually like really pick up our buying from Black Friday to Christmas. And we don't really worry about any kind of cutoff date. Cause unless you're doing something super seasonal, like Christmas decorations or something, then like stuff still sells really well in January. And we want to be taking advantage of the rock bottom prices when we can. So a lot of people ask me about like cutoff dates for Christmas, and it's like the best strategy is just keep buying like while the sales are good. Cause like this time of year, for example, it's much harder to buy profitable inventory than it is around Black Friday.
Interesting.
Last time you were on the show, you were talking about wholesale and growing your wholesale. What have you done on that side of the business? What's going on with wholesale, and how is that different than OA?
So to be honest, I haven't been like consistent enough with it. So it's something I got to get better at. And we've opened some accounts that do well for us. But I recently just hired a VA to do more wholesale outreach for me, because when it comes to wholesale, you just really have to be consistent with trying to reach out to brands and distributors every day. So that's kind of just like one extra step with wholesale, and that's opening accounts, but that can create a barrier of entry for other sellers. So once you have the accounts open, there's less chance of competition. And the harder an account is to get, meaning if a brand or distributor, they limit the number of Amazon sellers and you can get that account, then you're going to end up having way less competition.
Interesting. What about on Walmart? Are you doing anything on Walmart?
No.
No. Okay. Good to know.
Do you use your OA sourcing to help find opportunities for wholesale?
Yeah, definitely. So we see a lot of brands that do really well for us, and we're like trying to find distributors for those products, because a lot of the brands that are good for arbitrage are also good for wholesale, because you kind of want to be looking for products that have like 3 to 10 FBA sellers on average. You don't want things with just one or two sellers for the entire history of the product, because that means it's probably a private label product, or the brand has like one authorized seller that they work with. So there's a lot of overlap in the types of brands and products. So whenever we see a brand that we find on our arbitrage list that we think would be good for wholesale, we try to make a note to also reach out to them.
One thing that can be a challenge for a lot of sellers, either starting in RA or OA, or probably even wholesale, is they're gated from either that brand or that category. You know, ungating, I feel like, was potentially easier years ago, But what do you do to get ungated for a brand or a category? Is it still the same thing where you can go purchase 10 units from a Kohl's or somewhere else and submit that invoice and Amazon will ungate you?
I've actually heard that it's gotten easier recently, that Amazon started accepting like Walmart receipts for ungating. So I'm actually not a great person to ask about ungating because I haven't done any ungating on my own account in like 3 years or something. And Amazon's always changing like what they will and won't accept. So people always ask me for advice on this, but I'm like, I really don't know because I've had an account since 2016. So I'm not gated in a lot of stuff. So yeah, I've heard recently from like people in my Discord group that you could just get ungated with a Walmart receipt, but I don't know for sure because I've never tried it. And even if it did work for me, you never know like what Amazon is going to accept. Like dealing with seller support, they don't operate based off of logic most of the time. It's kind of like you get a copy paste response, so you never really know what to expect.
let's talk about some crazy buys or your best buys, and I'll start because this lead came from your list. This was probably, honestly, it was probably like the second list after I signed up for your leads list that it came on. So it was right off the bat. But it was candies called Cream Savers, and it was a 4-pack. So I actually learned how to prep off of that list, off that first deal too, or polybagging these 4. It was $2 per bag, small bag, probably like 10, 15 candies in each one. And it was a 4-pack. So I just polybagged a 4-pack of these. My all-in cost was $8. It was $2 a bag. And they were selling on Amazon for $65 to $70. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was like $35, $40 profit per everyone sold. And I think I sold probably like 150 or 200 units of these things. Because I kept buying and I could not believe it. That got me hooked. And of course, if you've got your losses as well, but that was so fun. I couldn't believe people were buying it. I almost felt like I was ripping people off. But they were. What stories like that do you have? I mean, is there any like just massive buys that you've made that have made a lot of money?
Yeah, I've had a couple. One that comes to mind was actually a retail arbitrage purchase. I think you mentioned the candy you sold was like, it was discontinued for a while. And
yes, that was the deal.
Yeah, so discontinued stuff is the best if you can get it. So I got this mascara that the brand was Marc Jacobs. And they stopped like making their mascara line. And I think they only do like fragrances now, but I ended up being able to buy like 1,000 units from a retailer because I had like a good relationship with the management there. And they actually like lowered their price because they were trying to liquidate them. So they normally retail for $27 and I bought them for like $9 each, but I knew that they were like completely gone. So I just sat on them for like a couple months and all the other Amazon sellers went out of stock. And then I was selling them for like $50 each because I was like one of the last sellers in stock. And like I said, I got like 1,000 units, so that made me a lot of money.
I love that stuff. I love that. I love it. I get so excited talking.
You need more leads list.
I know. I mean, like I was telling you before we went live, Dave, I was like, you know, there's so many different things that I'm doing. And I want to focus more on OA because it's, I mean, it's really simple math. It's if you've got a good process down and you can get to where you're, you know, it's going to be like on average, like a 30, 35, 40% ROI on your money. At that point, it's just a matter of how much you spend.
Yeah.
Spend more. All things being equal, if your wins and losses stay the same on this, you're going to make 30 to 40% return on every dollar you spend. So it's just a matter of spending more and more and more. And I have fallen short on that, but that's why I was excited to have you back on. Cause every time I do something like this, I get reinvigorated to go harder and do more. But I mean, am I wrong? I mean, that's the play, right? You're the more you can spend, the more you can make.
Yeah, pretty much. I think in reality, the return ends up being less than what you expect. Like if you find an item and it's at 65% ROI, a lot of times that'll come down to like 30. But as long as you're like leaving a decent margin for error with your buys, even if it comes down a little bit, then you should still make a decent return. And by decent, I mean like 20, 30%, which is pretty good compared to like the stock market. And you could turn that over like a bunch of times throughout the year. So it can end up being more than that.
Well, you bring up a good point. That is the beauty of this is, you could turn your money monthly on this. I mean, so that 20% ROI over the year turns into a much bigger ROI on that same dollar.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why the reason we're like pretty aggressive with our pricing, like if something tanks after 15 days and there's little chance of it coming back, then we're better off just getting our money back and churning that again and again and trying to buy better inventory.
That's sort of where I've been leaning in terms of what we're talking about is if you see that price plummet, you've got some inventory left. You're right. You'd rather just have that money or some of that money back now and reinvest it. Talk about your leads list. What made you, obviously you built this team of VAs. I'm assuming you were potentially, they were generating more leads than maybe you could even do yourself. So you created leads lists, which you're selling. And it's a great model. These lists are just going out to a select few people for each list so that it doesn't get oversaturated with those leads. What made you want to do that in the first place? And, how is that business going for you?
The business does well. There's a lot of things you can do, as you guys know, related to selling on Amazon that make money. So whether that's starting a prep center, a leads list, doing consulting, making software. There's so many things you could do, but part of the reason it works well for us is we have a lot of excess leads that we just can't possibly buy all of them. And like a lot of leads, so I like using like lego.com, for example. They usually don't let you place very big orders. So for a beginner, to buy a couple of Lego sets, that might be like a really good lead for them. But we don't really buy from there because it's not worth our time to just get like two units of one product. So there's a lot of leads that might be good for another seller that aren't really good for us. And we've kind of scaled that business up now to where we have like 13 VAs. So we have so many leads now and we can't possibly use them all. So the leads list was like a really good thing for us to get into. And there seems to be a lot of demand for it because whether it's our leads list or there are several other leads lists that I know of that most of the time all of their lists are sold out. So I think people see the value in it and that it saves you a lot of time from doing the sourcing yourself. And even if you're not buying the leads directly off the list, you can use the list as a method to find other opportunities. So you might see where a sale is and go look at the other products that are part of that sale.
Absolutely. I mean, I found on your leads list, I mean, it'll be a variation of a product that's on the lead, but there'll be 9 variations on there. And there's those other variations are in the same boat where they do meet the, you know, the goals, like the numbers look right for buys. So there's a lot of ways. Also, you can see the leads and you can see who else is selling. You can see the other sellers and you can see what they're selling.
Yeah.
You know, they're arbitrage sellers of some sort. And so being able to see what they're selling and then go investigate where you can purchase those.
Yeah, there's exactly.
What are the techniques your leads team is using to find these leads? Are they using tactical arbitrage? Are they doing other things like I was just talking about? Is there a wide variety or is there just one main tactic that they do?
We don't do a lot of tactical arbitrage anymore. We used to use it more, but we found that the quality of leads with tactical arbitrage usually isn't as good. Just because a lot of people are scanning through there and also it doesn't find everything. So for example, the UPC on a product is probably going to find the main product when you run it through a TA scan, but it's not going to find the bundle of like the shampoo and conditioner. And that's like where a lot of the money is with arbitrage. So most of our team does manual sourcing. So you're just looking up products in Amazon, or they'll use Keepa Product Finder, which is free with your Keepa subscription. I guess it's not free. It's like $18 a month, but it's just a way to filter products. So you can say, show me everything with under 100,000 sales rank in the toy category where Amazon is out of stock 50% of the time and it has at least 50 reviews. And then it'll show you all the products that match your criteria. And then you just Google search all of those products. So it's a way of reverse sourcing. And with reverse sourcing, that's like the best way to find really obscure websites that other people are not really looking at. So not Target or Walmart.com, but like horses.com or something like that, like where your competition is going to be way lower.
I've noticed that actually with a lot of the leads on your list is a lot of the websites are obscure.
Yeah.
I usually get excited for those. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way a lot of people are going here. The small website, this is perfect.
This looks shady. Let me get into this.
Yeah, we do our best to like vet them to make sure they're not a scam, which it's hard sometimes to like, to tell exactly, but we try to look at like Trustpilot and see if they have social media that has actual people in the pictures and not like stock images from like wherever.
Well, I haven't had any issues. Yeah, it's been a year and a half and everything's been legit. So
yeah. Yeah. And a lot of them are like regional stores, like,
right.
They have like a physical storefront. So, you know, they're like a real store, but they're only in like one part of the country. And a lot of those are like the best websites to order from.
Well, I found that to be the case for products as well. Like really localized, whether it's like, I'll use Kansas City as an example, like barbecue sauce in Kansas City that I could go buy it like in my local Walmart or local grocery store, but it's not going to be at every Walmart or every grocery store across the country. It's localized, but you've got people that are looking for it on Amazon. Those are a lot of times really good opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a product like that. It's a grocery product that we buy wholesale and we just drive to their warehouse and pick it up. So that saves us money on shipping and it's like a local to Florida grocery item. So yeah, that works really well.
What's next for you, Dave? What, anything you're working on for future businesses or expanding or other marketplaces? We were talking to somebody the other day on the podcast, talking about doing arbitrage, like in different marketplaces that Amazon exists in. What's next on your horizon?
It's kind of more of the same for me. Like, I feel I already don't have time to do what I'm doing. So right now we're hiring more VAs to add another leads list. There's been a lot of demand for our pro leads list, which is limited to just 10 sellers, and we always have a waiting list for it. So we're trying to add like a second pro leads list because we have demand for it that we're not able to utilize. And then, like I said, for the Amazon side, I just hired a VA to help me with wholesale so that I can be more consistent with brand and distributor outreach. So those are kind of, I'm trying to be more of a CEO now than like in the day-to-day operations, but it's easier said than done. It's like you make processes and then sometimes they don't work. So then you got to adjust them.
What's your pro list? What's that mean? If the pro leads list, how's that different than your other leads list?
It's pretty similar in terms of the lead quality. The quality might be a little bit better because we usually prioritize that one when we have all our leads for the day. We'll usually start by putting some of the best ones on the pro list. But the main benefit to it is it's limited to 10 sellers, which is pretty small for a leads list. I don't know any other leads lists that have less than that. And then our other main leads list are limited to 30 sellers. So it's just a little bit more exclusive. And that seems to be like where the industry is going with OA leads lists. There seems to be more demand for that, in my opinion. But you pay a higher price for it. So, but people seem to be good with paying the higher price as long as the leads are more exclusive.
Well, we've got it scrolling across the bottom of the screen right now. But for anybody who's listening, just audio, you want to tell them where they can go to find out more information about your leads list?
Yep, it's www.oadeals.biz, B-I-Z.
Well, we will make sure that that's in the notes, the podcast notes and the descriptions on YouTube and everywhere else where this is going to go. So people can go check it out, oadeals.biz. Dave, thanks so much for joining us. This has been fun. I mean, like I said, I love
it. Yeah, it's fun. You guys got to have me back on in another year.
we'll try not to wait so long this time.
Yeah, see what you're up to.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. Have a great weekend. We'll be back at it again next week. See ya.